Well, it was about 30 miles west of Grayson, Kentucky, which is the county seat of Carter County, and about 20 miles north of Sandy Hook, which is the county seat of Ellett County, and about 18 miles east of Moorhead. But I don't know what the county seat of Round County is, but it is the Eastern Kentucky University, and I might add where my dad went to school, and about 10 miles southwest of Olive Hill, in a white house on the side of a hill that you can barely see from the road, and best known as the Eddie Jones Farm on Greenbrier. That's where I first saw daylight as a crying baby, May the 12th, 1914. Greenbrier is one of the many creeks and hollows near Mockaby Creek and Porter Creek in Carter County. Now, that's where I spent the first 9 months of my life, just being a baby. That old hillside farm was so poor that it'd take a gallon of whiskey to raise fight on it. So we moved to Porter Creek, named after the Porters living there, next to Grandpa Porter's farm. And there's where I lived the first 12 years of my life. I guess the first thing that I can remember was when I was about 3 1/2 years old. And my mother had taken me to see my aunt, Martha Porter, Uncle Millard Porter's wife, that lived at Olive Hill. That's called Tick Ridge at Olive Hill. But I can only remember one little incident that happened on that trip that summer. And my aunt was lying in bed, and I was so small that she couldn't see me standing in the bed. So she asked Mom if she'd stand me up in a chair so she could see me. And I remember what she said. She said, "Well, bless his little heart, he looked so much like Paul." Well, Paul was her little boy, who was about 2 or 3 years older than me. That was the summer before the bad winter of 1918. I guess the next thing that I can remember was walking down a steep hill and Dad holding my hand. There was about 6 or 8 inches of snow with a hard crust of sleet on top. And I was slipping and sliding all over the place. And I might have slid clear into the holler if Dad hadn't been holding my hand. He said for me to start to stomp my heels down real hard, and that would break the crust, and I wouldn't slip so bad, and I could walk better. That was the bad winter of 1918, so I couldn't have been more than 4 years old. I can also remember the sleet that was on the trees, and the limbs were down to the ground, and I tried to beat it off with an old boom handle. But, of course, a four-year-old couldn't do very much. But I remember trying anyway. I can remember my dad putting my shoes on and helping me get dressed on a cold morning after the wood had burned out through the night in the fireplace. It'd be real cold the next morning. I can remember the good times that we had around that old fireplace, too, roasting potatoes and ashes of the night and popping corn and so forth. That was the good old days. There was a small creek that ran in front of our house, and I remember 1 year Dad bought me a little pair of rubber boots with a bright red ring around the tops, and I thought it was such a miracle that I could wade in the water and not get my feet wet. I guess it was the first boots that I ever had or had ever seen. And you guessed it, I spent a lot of time wading the creek, sometimes even in over my boots, which wasn't so good. Sometimes after a big rain, that little creek became pretty big with big muddy waves running real fast. I remember watching the swift waves, and it would make me feel like that the land I was standing on was running up the stream. And the waves were really standing still. Of course, my head was swimming, but I didn't know it at that time. Later on, I learned what was really going on, but I spent a lot of time standing there on the bank, taking a ride upstream. So you see, I was just a little country boy, gradually growing up. I guess everything went on as normal until I was about 8, 9 years old, about as could be expected. I sure did love my grandparents, my grandma and Grandpa Manning. They were so good to me. I loved to spend the weekend with them. my three cousins, Gerald, Fred, and Arnold, Uncle Tom, and Aunt Nell, the boys, they lived just across the creek. And when they'd see me over there, well, they'd always come over. We'd play and have a big time. Sometimes three or four other cousins would come and spend the weekend. I don't see how Grandpa and Grandma put up with all of us, because we were always into everything. Reminds me of that poem, Vacation Time, which I'll just say for you now so that you can see what I mean. It goes like this. Vacation time at last is here, the jolliest time of all of the year. Away with your books and pencils and pens, and now's the time to go and visit our friends. We always to the country go, me and my younger brother Joe. We jump the fences and climb the trees and run through the meadows chasing bees. We eat apples, peaches, plums, and grapes, and getting an awful lot of scrapes. But then it was vacation time, you know, and I don't think folks ought to mind things so. One day, Joe and me, we went down to the meadow of the bulls to see. We couldn't get a very good look at him, so we laid down the bars and just walked right in. You should have seen his shining eyes. Joe said he's a taking in our size. And good start. We clean forgot to put up those bars. And that mean old bull, as sure we were born, he just walked right out in the grandpa's corner. Joe and me didn't know what to do with ear after ear we saw him chew. Grandpa came out and he made an awful fuss, and he just allowed that it had happened all through us. But then it was vacation time, you know, and I don't think Grandpa got mad at me and Joe. Now, my grandma's old dog, Rover, he was a fine old chap, but he liked to take a big afternoon nap. So we spied him asleep one day, and we vowed we were going to make him get up and play. So we slipped in the cellar, and we got us a tin pail, and we tied it hard and fast on old Rover's tail. We hollered and sicked, and he ran like sin. And he ran, and he banged until he'd spoil the tin. Grandma came out and all the rest, and she said, "You boys must be possessed. If you don't leave the animals and things alone, I'm going to pack your clothes and send you home." But then it was vacation time, you know, and I don't think folks ought to mind things so. Now, my grandma, she sure knew how to bake. You never taste such good pies and cakes. And they was in the cellar on a high up shelf, so we just got us a chair and we helped ourselves. And that comes the feller, my brother Joe. I just gave him a little bit of a tilt, and he sat right down in a pan of milk. Grandma had a terrible time making his clothes clean, and she said that he'd spoiled every bit of her cream. But then it was vacation time, you know, and I don't think Grandma got mad at me and Joe. So you see what I mean. But that was the good old days that I'll never, never forget. Of course, there was work to be done as well as play. Grandpa said to me one day, said, "If you'll help me plant this field of corn and beans, I'll give you a little pig." And oh boy, what a thrill that was. So Grandpa got the old corn planter and handed me a paper bag of beans, and we headed to the cornfield. Grandpa would open the old corn planter and stick it in the ground, and I would drop two beans in, and he would close it up and repeat again and again until we planted the whole field. Oh, what a thrill it was when we started to the barn to get that little pig. The old sow had about 8 or 10 little red pigs running around, and they were so pretty. And Grandpa said, "Pick out the one that you want." And I could hardly decide which one, because they were all so pretty that I'd like to have taken them all. After so long a time, I finally picked out one, and Grandpa put it in a burlap bag for me and put it on my shoulder and started me toward home. I was really walking on cloud 9. I was so anxious to get home and show Dad and Mom what a pretty little pig that Grandpa had given me for helping him plant corn And beans, oh boy, was I ever happy. I surely enjoyed feeding that little pig and watching him grow up. But I didn't know that we'd be eating him that fall. Grandpa was always jolly and full of fun, and Grandma was always of the serious kind. And she was serious about everything. And I remember eating dinner one day, and Grandpa poured the cream in his cup and drank it. And then said to Grandma, said, "Francis, you forgot to put any cream on the table." And I was about to tell Grandma what he had done, and he said, "Shh, shh," and winked at me and said, "Don't say nothing." And poor old Grandma, she got up, said, "My goodness, did I? I'm so forgetful," and got up and got some more cream. I felt so sorry for her because I thought she really had forgotten, or rather she thought she'd really forgotten. And I remember Grandpa had a great big log out in the front yard, the wood yard, and he was going to use for firewood. And he said to me, he said, "If you'll help me saw that off that big log, I'll make Francis give you some eggs for each log that we saw off, and you can take them home and put them under a setting hen and hatch you some little chickens." Oh boy, I thought that would be wonderful, have some little baby chicks all my own. So we got the old cross-cut saw and started sawing. And believe me, we sawed 18 big back logs. That's what Grandpa called them. He said, "Put one on, then..." He said to put one of them on first, and then little logs in front, and that would make a good fire. I still remember the good hot fires that he'd build at night. We went in the kitchen where Grandma was, and he said, "Francis," says, "give this boy some eggs to set so he can raise him some little chicken. He's been helping me saw wood. I told him if you'd give him..." I told him that I'd give him an egg for each log that he helped me saw off. And we sawed off 18. Grandma, she started getting the eggs and counted me out 9 in a paper bag and went to get some more. When she came back, she said, 8. And I started to tell her that there was 9 in the bag. And Grandpa said, "Shh, shh," and winked at me and told me, "Be quiet and let her count." So she counted out 18, which was really 19. And Grandpa said, "See, you have to learn to trick the women. And you got an extra egg that way," which suited me okay. That really tickled me. Some weekends I'd spend with Uncle Tom and the boys, and we'd go possum hunting of a night. And we had a lot of fun. I remember one night we went, and for some reason or other, the dog ran a rabbit in a rock pile. And we managed to catch that rabbit, and we put him in the sack. And we had a burlap bag with us, and we were going to put our possums in, we caught, which we did. We caught a lot of possums. And in fact, we ate them. And baked with sweet potatoes, it was pretty good eating. Anyway, Fred, he was a great big overgrown boy, and as awkward as he could be, you could just give him a little push and he'd fall all over himself. And anyhow, he had a little pup, and it was a shepherd, and it was a great big dog, and big awkward fella, big feet, and so he wanted to take that possum up one night. Well, the little old pup followed us for a while, and I guess he kind of began to give out. We'd already caught a rabbit and one possum at that time. So Fred, he every once in a while stopped and called this little old pup to catch up with us. So when I was carrying the sack, it had the rabbit and possum or two in it, and so I just, when the little pup came up and I caught them all not looking, I just stuck that pup down in the bag too, with the possum and the rabbit. I told him on my back and went on my way. So after a while, I said, "Here, Fred," I said, "carry this sack a while. I said, it's getting heavy. I said, them old possums and rabbits are really heavy. So he grabbed the bag, you know, and throwed it on his shoulder without looking in. Started to carry it, so every once in a while, well, he'd stop and call that little old pup, you know, wanting him to catch up with us. And all the time, he had that pup right in his sack that he was carrying on his back. So, as I said, he was awfully awkward and clumsy. So we came to a real steep bank, and he was afraid that he was going to lose this pup for good. He wouldn't come back home, and so anyhow, when we came to this real steep bank where it was almost straight up and down, we started to go down it. I had a stick in my hand, a big long stick I was walking along with, like using it like a cane. So when Fred gets to the top of this big bank, I just stuck that stick between his legs and tripped him. And he fell all the way down that bank, which was about 20 feet. Went rolling down through there, and of course he dropped the sack off his back, and the possums and the rabbit and the dog come pulling out of it. Of course the possums and the rabbit were dead, but the dog wasn't. And anyway, when Fred got up, here that dog was. He'd been carrying him all that time, and he'd just give out from carrying that dog, and all the time he would call it every once in a while, trying to get this pup to catch up with him. I laughed at him, but I couldn't laugh. That's just one of the little funny things that I thought, was funny. Of course, I guess Fred didn't think it was so funny. another time, it might have been the same night, the dogs had treated the little old possum up a small tree. It wasn't a big round leg. So I said we could see the possum sitting upon a limb. I don't know how many dogs we had, but we had three or four dogs, I guess, with us. And I was always afraid of dogs to fight. When a dog get in a fight around close to me, it just scared me to death. But anyway, they put it on me to climb the tree and shake the possum out. So I went and climbed this little old tree, and I got up about 10 or 15 feet off the ground. And when I reached out to get this possum, well, the doggone tree broke right in the middle. And down me and possum and the top of the tree came, and all them dogs, they rushed in to catch the possum, and the thing landed right on my back, me on my hands and feet, and I was trying to run to get away, and all them dogs fighting right over the top of me, trying to get a hold of that possum, and I was scared in an inch of my life. I thought them dogs were going to eat me up, but of course they wasn't interested in me. They was interested in trying to catch the possum, which they did, of course killed it. They got a big kick out of that, Uncle Tom and the boy did. They got to laugh at me for falling out of the tree and getting scared of dogs fighting. Oh well, we had a lot of fun. I'll never forget those days. I spent many a weekend with Uncle Tom's and at Grandma's and playing with the boys and getting into all kinds of scrapes. It was a good old days that I'll never forget. I remember one day, I told us to go pick some blackberries. And so we were picking blackberries, and all of a sudden I heard something go whiz right past my ear. I didn't know what it was. In a few minutes, another thing come by, and it didn't pass. It hit me in the side of the head and bounced off, and I seen what it was. It was a great big green berry. And so my older cousin, Gerald, he was picking off a greenberry every once in a while, and some way or other he'd flip it. And it was just like a bullet almost. And he was throwing them at me, and flipping them at me. So I guess he started to get another one. And he saw a big green one, as he thought, and he started to reach and get it. And whenever he reached and got it, and started to pull it off the vine, he pulled it out, and it was a green snake. He had a hold of his head. And boy, he screamed, you could hurt him for a mile. I got to laugh at him for doing that. He'd been having fun out of flipping those berries at me. That vacation time poem that I said a while ago for you remind me of a lot of the things that us boys used to get into. We used to like to go to the mulberry tree and eat mulberries. We'd cracked walnuts, and there was an early June apple tree. We used to go raid it, and we just had a lot of fun. Yeah, I'll never forget. One winter when I was there, well, we decided to go track rabbits in the snow. And we got a neighbor to go with us. So we went way back in the woods and was tracking rabbits. And so this neighbor said, well, he said, here's a fox's track. And so he started tracking this fox. And he said, well, it's a red fox, too. And I kind of laughed. I thought, well, now, how can you tell by looking at a fox's track whether it's a red fox or a gray fox? But I guess it's really, after he told me, I guess there's really a way that you can tell the difference. He showed me that a red fox's middle toe is longer than the other toes, whereas a gray fox, its feet, the toes are all the same length. So it makes a round track, whereas the red fox, he has that one middle toe sticking out farther than the other one, and so you can see that by the track on the snow that it was a red fox. Well, anyway, we got that settled, but it reminded me of Uncle Tom when he was a boy. He came in the house one day and he said, you know, Mother, said, I smell a half-grown, short-striped polecat. In other words, he described what kind of a cat it was just by the smell of it, which, of course, he couldn't do, but he was just a little boy. I reckon he just thought it was that kind. Well, anyway, I know we tracked this fox up to a hole where it had gone back in the ground, and so we had a ferret with us. And when we'd find where a rabbit would go in a hole, well, we'd put the ferret down at the hole, and it'd go in and run the rabbit out, and we'd catch the rabbit then. And so we was wondering if the ferret could run that fox out. So we decided we'd try it anyway. So my neighbor, Lee Jones and Gerald, they was each one wanting to get down by the hole and catch the rabbit as it come out. Each one was saying, I mean, catch the fox. Each one was saying, oh, now, you'll let it get away. You better let me down there. There was kind of a sunk place in the ground where the hole started. So after a while, Gerald, he won. He said, if there's anything comes out of that hole, I'll catch it regardless of what it is. If it's a fox or a bear or anything else, I'll latch right onto it. Well, in a few minutes, that old ferret, after he got back in the hole there, we heard the awful noise back in there. And so Gerald was right down at the hole with his hands just ready to catch it when they come out, you know. Well, instead of it being a fox, which that's what we were hoping for, it was a big rabbit. And boy, here he come, he's running his best. And it scared Gerald so bad that he thought that it was the fox, and it scared him so bad he just fell backward and that old rabbit run right over him and got away. I remember many a time when I'd be spending the weekend there on a Sunday afternoon, we'd be playing around, I'd forget that I had to go home that evening because I had to go to school the next morning, and my dad was a school teacher there too. And he'd always told me, be sure that you get home before dark. Well, us boys get to playing around, and I wouldn't be noticing the time, and the first thing I know, the sun would be going down. And I knew I had to be home before it got dark or else. So, of course, we was always barefooted through the summertime, so I'd start running. And I'd run all the way home, and it's a good 2 miles. Now then, I couldn't even run across the street. I'd be out of breath. But back then, well, I guess I was pretty tough. I've run that distance many a time, and if you don't think it's a good 2 miles, you just measure from where my grandfather Manning lived and where we lived on Porter Creek. It's a good country mile at that. I guess I wasn't as close to my Grandpa Porter as what I was to my Grandma and Grandpa Manning, because, you see, my Grandma Porter died when my dad was only a little boy. And, of course, Grandpa remarried several times, in fact, two more times. And his first remarriage, I don't even remember her. Her name was Liz, And then he married Kate Pelfrey. I remember her. That's Harlan and Herman and Irene's mother. And she was always good to me, but it was never, I guess, like your real grandma. And I guess that's one reason why that I was never as close to Grandpa Porter as what I was Grandpa Manning. But he was always good to me. And anytime me and Dad would go up there, well, sit around and talk of a night like we did sometimes, he'd always go get a big pan full of apples, and we'd sit and peel apples and eat apples and talk. And he had an orchard back on the hill, and he had a cellar where he could keep his apples, and he always had apples over winter, and we always enjoyed going up every once in a while and enjoying those good Milam apples. I can still remember how they taste. Speaking of rabbit hunting a while ago, remind me of a lot of little incidents that's happened. I used to do a lot of rabbit hunting when I was a teenage boy growing up. I remember once when Dennis came out from Ashland and we went a-hunting, I could chase around over the hillside and didn't tire me out, but by the time we'd get up to the top of the hill, he'd be about out of breath. Anyway, he had an automatic shotgun, a lot of shells, and I never could afford to buy very many. If I had three or four shells, I thought I was doing good. Anyway, dog would run the rabbit around the side of the hill, and I could see the old rabbit. See him coming around toward me. So when he got as close as what I thought he was going to come, in fact, he did start to go across the hill, why, I shot him. And when I went to pick him up, why, there laid another one, kicking right over from him, about 4 or 5 feet away. I reckon he just enough shot missed the one that was a-running that went on and hit the one that was sitting there, so I killed two that shot. About that time, my venison was over on the edge of the woods from me, kind of across the hillside, so he hollered and he said, "Well, did you get him?" I said, "Yeah," I said, "I done better than that. I got two that shot." And he said, "Oh," said, "you're just a lying." And I said, "No, I'm not. I'll not go any closer." I said, "I just want you to come here and look at this." So he comes up there, you know, and he looked. Well, here he seen where the rabbit was running, you know, and I'd killed him. And he seen the big sitting place where the other one was sitting. So he said, "Well," he said, "that beats all I've ever seen in my life." He said, "Just take my gun and shells," and he said, "I'm going to go to the house." He said, "I won't even hunt with a guy like that. That's that lucky to kill two rabbits with one shot." Well, anyway, that is true. That really happened. So way later on in life, he worked at Armaco Steel Mill, and he was telling the guys there all about this, you know, about me killing two rabbits with one shot. So he said to me one day, several years later, he said, "I want to ask you something." He said, "Did you actually kill two rabbits with one shot when we was out hunting?" I said, "Yeah, I sure did." I said, "Don't you remember it?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "I remembered it." He said, "I told the guys down at the mill so many times about it." Why, he said, "And they called me a liar," said, "till I got to where I really didn't know whether I was telling the truth or whether I was lying." And he said, "I just wanted to know for sure if it was the truth or if I really had been lying." I remember another time when I was up on top of the hill in Charlie Clay's field right in front of our house, rabbit hunting. There's broom sage was way up waist high, and the wind was blowing real hard, and the sun was shining real bright. The sun was to my back, and I was going to walk along through this broom sage. All of a sudden, I looked down, and there sat a